man and try to fight them off? Then again, if he was caught in Ruby's apartment, she would be on the hook for it. He couldn't do that to her. Damn it, he cursed, paralyzed by indecision. Just as the knocking came again, more insistent this time. He took a careful step toward the door. Ruby had a peephole. Perhaps he could assess the situation in the hall before deciding what to do. If there were only two soldiers there, he had a chance to take them. He was just about to lean in toward the door when he heard someone crying. It sounded like a child. He peered out and realized he was looking at a dark-haired little girl, maybe 12 or 13.
Please, Madame Benoit, the girl said in French through sobs. It's my maman. She needs your help.
Thomas held his breath. Could it be some sort of trap? Had the Nazis put the child up to this so that he'd open the door? When he didn't answer, the girl seemed to pull herself together a bit. She knocked once more, more softly this time.
Monsieur Pilot?
She said more softly, and he was so startled that he took a step back from the door.
I know you're in there. Please, my mother has fallen. I need your help. I can be trusted. I'm Ruby's friend.
Thomas stood stock still, and after a moment, the girl whispered,
Please,
in such a pitiful tone that he could feel his heart breaking a little.
I don't know what else to do,
she added, backing away from the door. He watched her through the peephole as she disappeared into the apartment in the elbow of the building. He hesitated only a moment longer before slipping quietly out of Ruby's apartment into the dim hall. He felt exposed, but he couldn't go back now. It would be unconscionable to turn his back on a child who needed his help. Drawing a deep breath and hoping for the best, he knocked lightly on the door of the girl's apartment. Chapter 18. October 1941. Charlotte was in a panic. She and Maman had been in the kitchen, chopping a few precious potatoes to make a soup, when her mother suddenly collapsed in a heap, striking the counter on her way down. Now, Charlotte couldn't wake her, and the blood pouring from her forehead was forming a small, frightening pool. She had tried everything she could think of, shaking her mother, talking loudly to her, placing a cool cloth on her forehead. But Maman hadn't even stirred. And her father likely wouldn't be home for hours. He had disappeared early this morning for a meeting with a few other men Charlotte knew from the synagogue. Charlotte had tried Ruby's apartment, but no one had come to the door. The other neighbors, well, some of them had made clear their feelings about Jews. And she certainly didn't want to enlist the help of anyone who hated her family. Who knew what could happen? She couldn't call a doctor for help either. The one who had delivered Ruby's stillborn baby had left for the free zone weeks ago, and she didn't know another. Her father had spoken sternly to her several times about how there was no way to know whom to trust anymore. Charlotte bent to her mother's side again.
Please, wake up, Maman. Please, I don't know what to do.
But her mother still didn't stir. Just then, there was a light knock at the door. Heart thudding, Charlotte crept to the peephole and looked out. There was a man she didn't know in the hallway, dressed in pants and a shirt too small for him.
"I'm the pilot, mademoiselle," he said softly in accented French. "I'm here to help."
She recognized him now, though he was clean-shaven and looked much different than he had the day he arrived. She took a deep breath and opened the door.
"Hello, monsieur."
She looked him up and down. He had broad shoulders, dark hair, and bright blue eyes, the kind that looked like they would crinkle at the corners when he smiled.
"Please, come in."
"Something happened to your mother?"
He was already moving into her apartment.
"Yes."
Charlotte swallowed hard, scrambling after him. She could see him looking around quickly, and she wondered fleetingly what he was seeing. Did he notice the Star of David quilt her grandmother had sewn, now lying folded over a chair? Did he see the threadbare sofa, the worn rug, the things Mama was ashamed of?
"She fell while we were chopping potatoes. I can't wake her up."
Charlotte could feel tears streaming down her face, and she was embarrassed. She wasn't a baby. Why was she crying?
But the pilot didn't seem to notice. He was already kneeling beside her mother, placing two fingers on her neck and bending his ear toward her mouth.
"Is she breathing?" Charlotte asked, trying not to sound as frantic as she felt.
"She is. Do you have a clean towel you can bring me?" he asked without turning around. "And a jug of cool water, please."
"Of course."
Charlotte raced into the bathroom, where she grabbed a fresh towel. She handed it to the pilot, who was still bent over her mother. Then she quickly got him a large pitcher of water.
"Is she going to be all right?"
"Yes, I think she just fainted. Look, she's already regaining consciousness."
Charlotte peered over his shoulder at her mother, whose eyelids were indeed beginning to flutter.
"Oh, thank God. Mama, Mama, are you all right?"
Her mother mumbled something unintelligible and closed her eyes again.
"She'll be okay," the pilot said. "We'll just need to check and see how badly she hit her head. Had she been ill?"
"Not that I know of."
Charlotte felt like a terrible daughter. How could she not have noticed that there was something wrong with her mother?
"Don't worry," the pilot said, apparently reading her thoughts. "Sometimes these things just happen, and you acted quickly to get her help. You showed great presence of mind."
"But I risked exposing you." She realized suddenly how foolish she'd been. "If someone had seen..."
"But no one did. Besides, when one's mother is ill, it's impossible to think clearly, isn't it?"
Charlotte nodded.
Do you have a mother?"
She knew the question was silly as soon as it was out of her mouth. Of course he had a mother.
"Yes, I did. She was a wonderful woman."
He hesitated.
"Now, let's get your mum over to the couch so that we can prop her head up a bit, shall we?"
Charlotte nodded, and as the pilot scooped her mother effortlessly into his arms, she grabbed the bloodied towel and the water and followed him to where he laid her down, gently. Mama's eyelids were fluttering again, and she was trying to say something.
"What is it, Mama?"
Charlotte asked, leaning in.
"The man,"
her mother rasped weakly.
"Who is the man?"
The pilot smiled and stepped back as Charlotte squeezed Maman's hand.
"A friend, Maman, is a friend."
An hour later, Maman was resting comfortably in her own bed, her head bandaged after the pilot had determined that the wound wasn't deep.
"It might be a good idea to have a doctor take a look, just to ensure it doesn't get infected," he said. "But it's nothing to worry about for now. As for the fainting, I think perhaps your mother isn't getting enough to eat."
"None of us are."
The pilot nodded.
"Rations are very tight, aren't they?"
"I sometimes think the damned Nazis are trying to starve us all to death."
"I certainly wouldn't put it past them."
If the pilot was shocked by her language, he didn't show it.
"Let's say we let your mother rest for a while. She should feel better after a bit of a sleep."
Charlotte hesitated, nodded to herself, and led the airman out of the room.
"Can I make you some coffee to thank you?" she asked.
He smiled again. He really did have a very nice smile, and she'd been right about his eyes crinkling at the edges.
"But you've just told me that things are strictly rationed."
"We have a bit of real coffee, saved for special occasions."
"Oh, but I don't think this is a special occasion. Your mother would surely have woken on her own. How about a simple glass of water, and you and I can have a chat?"
Charlotte suddenly felt shy.
"Okay."
She got him a glass of water from the kitchen and returned to the living room to find him sitting in the chair that her father normally used. She hesitated before handing him the glass. He leaned forward.
"Do you know Ruby very well?"
"Yes, we are very good friends."
Charlotte knew she was boasting, overselling her friendship with her neighbor. But Ruby really was her closest friend these days.
"Perhaps you can answer a question for me then."
Charlotte paused.
"Maybe."
"Do you think there's anything I can do to help her? She seems sad, and I wish I knew how to fix it."
Charlotte was startled. It wasn't at all what she'd expected him to ask.
I
I don't know.
Was he fishing for information? He didn't look like a gossip. In fact, he appeared genuinely concerned.
It's not because of her husband, you know. I think she misses him sometimes, but he wasn't very kind to her. Not as kind as someone should be to someone like Ruby, anyhow.
It's hard to imagine being unkind to a woman like her.
Charlotte felt guilty. She knew she'd said too much. But the pilot didn't look like he was judging Ruby. He just looked sort of sad himself.
Not to speak ill of the dead, but I think Monsieur Benoit made her feel useless.
She's anything but useless, isn't she?
She's very strong.
And yet, there's a sadness to her.
The pilot looked lost in thought.
It's because of the baby, I think.
The baby?
He leaned back like she'd knocked the wind out of him. She swallowed hard. Now she'd definitely gone too far.
I shouldn't have said anything. She doesn't like to talk about it. But she was pregnant, you see, a while ago. And the baby was born too early, without breathing. She hasn't been the same since it happened.
The pilot's gaze was still on Charlotte, but she had the sense that his mind was somewhere far away.
I'm very sorry to hear that, he said softly. Very sorry indeed.
Me too,
Charlotte agreed. They were silent for so long that Charlotte began to grow uneasy.
Can I ask you something?
Of course.
He seemed to snap back to reality.
What are you doing in Paris?
He told her of being shot down and hiking to the city in search of the man who lived in the building with the red door.
And I should probably move on now, he concluded, but I can't bring myself to.
Why not?
He sighed.
I don't exactly know.
Is it because of Ruby?
Maybe.
He refocused his gaze on her.
Charlotte, would you do something for me?
Yes, anything.
She was relieved to think she might be able to pay him back for helping her.
Will you promise to look out for her after I leave? Make sure that she has some happiness in her days.
Charlotte swelled with pride.
Yes, sir, I will.
She paused.
You care about her.
I do.
The pilot stood up and smiled once more.
Let me check on your mother again, and then I should be heading back.
Of course.
Charlotte led him down the hall to her parents' bedroom once again, where he felt her mother's pulse, put a hand on her forehead, and watched her sleep for a moment.
She should be fine, he said. But come back and get me if there's any problem, all right?
Yes, thank you again.
Charlotte led him out of the room, already feeling sad that their time together was up. He'd been a welcome distraction, and much like Ruby, he had talked to her as if she were an adult.
Can I give you some bread and cheese to thank you?
Oh, that's not necessary.
But Charlotte was already packing a small bundle. She knew Ruby's ration cards were for only one person, and that surely wasn't enough to feed this man.
She thrust the package at him and said, Please, it's the least I can do. If not for you, then for Ruby. The cheese? Is from the countryside. A friend of my papa brought it. But I know papa would want you to have it, for helping my maman.
He hesitated, then nodded, accepting the food as she walked him toward the front door.
May I ask you another question?
The pilot paused with his hand on the door.
Are you Jewish? Is that why you couldn't go for help?
Charlotte stared at him. Her father had said she wasn't supposed to volunteer her Judaism to anyone who might hurt her. But she knew that this man would never do that.
Yes.
One day, things will be different, he said after a very long pause. We're going to win this war, Charlotte. In the meantime, just hold on. Don't lose sight of who you are.
And then, before she could reply, he had slipped into the hallway. She watched him from her doorway until he was safely inside Ruby's apartment. Chapter 19 October 1941
Ruby? Aubert's eyes were wide with alarm as Ruby entered Café Michel on the Rue de Bourgogne just past noon. She had racked her brain all night, trying to think where she might find him, and finally she had remembered Marcel mentioning the place in passing, back when the Nazis first entered Paris. Aubert sometimes stopped there, Marcel had said once before abruptly falling silent, as if he'd said something wrong. Ruby had barely noticed it at the time, but in retrospect, she was sure he'd revealed something he wasn't supposed to. In any case, here Aubert sat, in the back of the café. There were Nazi soldiers dining nearby, talking, laughing, their plates piled with meat, bread, and vegetables, their glasses full of wine. She hated them with a ferocity that surprised her. "Hello, Aubert," she said, impressing herself with how calm she sounded. His eyes widened further. "It's Philippe," he corrected. "Surely you have me confused with someone else." She stared at him for a moment before she understood. He was using an alias. Had Marcel had one too? There were so many things she didn't know. "Yes, of course, Philippe. My mistake."
"Not a problem."
His smile was unnaturally stiff.
"Would you like to take a stroll?"
He was already placing a few coins on the table before she could respond. He grabbed her arm and led her out of the café.
"What in the hell are you doing here?"
he demanded in a whisper as soon as they were on the street. "Trying to find you."
"Ruby."
He sighed and withdrew a handkerchief from his pocket, blotting at the sweat that had beaded on his forehead.
"Your husband was executed for aiding Allied fugitives, in case you've forgotten. You could have led the Nazis straight to me."
"I wasn't followed."
"You approached me in a café, right under the Germans' noses?"
"You were sitting in a café right under the Germans' noses," Ruby pointed out.
"Part of my cover. I'm a collaborator as far as they know. You can't just put that in peril."
"You need to listen to me." She was sick of being chided. "I'm sheltering an RAF pilot." All at once, he went very still.
"Pardon."
"He showed up 5 days ago, looking for Marcel. He had a bad infection and a high fever. He's on the mend, but he needs to get back to England." There was a lump in her throat as she said the words.
"He just appeared, at your door."
Ruby nodded. She tried not to think of how vulnerable Thomas had looked when he collapsed in the hall. He'd heard about the escape line from another pilot who made it home safely.
"Damn it!"
Aubert's face turned red.
"They are not supposed to talk about the details."
Ruby remained silent until Aubert calmed down. "I need to connect Thomas, the pilot, to someone who can help him get out of Paris. And after that, I want to help. I want to help on the escape line."
"That's ridiculous, Ruby. You can't help."
She flinched. "How can you say that? I'm already helping."
"Marcel said you meant well, but that's not enough, Ruby."
"There's much more to me than good intentions." Aubert stared at her for a moment.
"Marcel also said you were careless. I'm sorry."
The words hit their mark. "Yes, well, Marcel was wrong about a lot of things. You know that as well as I do. He was hot-tempered and rash, and I'm not." Aubert didn't say anything for a long time.
"It's dangerous work, Ruby. You think I don't know the risks?"
Aubert sighed and put his hands up in a gesture of defeat.
"I'll send someone to pick up your pilot tomorrow. If all goes well, we can talk. But I make no promises."
She nodded, struggling to keep a straight face. "How will I know that the person who arrives tomorrow to retrieve the pilot is legitimate?"
"She will address you with a code name."
"She? So there were other women working on the line. Had Marcel worked side by side with them, treating them with respect while he belittled her?"
"A code name?" "We all have one. It's helpful not to know one another's true identity."
He paused and studied her.
"From now on, you'll be Fleur."
"Fleur?" He smiled slightly.
"Marcel said you were always talking about the poppy fields back home. Alors, now you have a chance to be your own flower."
He whirled around and walked back into the cafe before she could say another word. She wasn't sure whether the name was meant to mock her, but she liked it regardless. She allowed herself a tiny smile before turning in the opposite direction. Fleur, she thought as she headed back toward her apartment. She who blooms in the midst of the darkness. She felt invincible as she walked past a cluster of Nazi soldiers at the corner of the Rue de l'Université. One of them whistled at her, but she ignored him. She finally had a purpose, a reason for being here. But there was also a part of her that was full of regret. Thomas. Sending him on his way was the right thing. There was no doubt about it. But Ruby knew her apartment would feel empty without him. How was that possible? She'd only just met him. You can't think that way, she reminded herself as she hurried along, keeping her eyes straight ahead. You can't get emotionally involved. But there was something different about Thomas, something she couldn't quite put a finger on. And now, perhaps, she'd never know why she felt the way she did. It was nearing dusk when she arrived home. Hello? She called when it seemed she was alone in the apartment. For a moment, her heart was in her throat. Had the authorities come for Thomas? Had something happened? But a moment later, he emerged from her wardrobe looking sheepish.
I heard someone and hid, he said, running his right hand through his hair. Sorry.
No, you did the right thing.
Where were you?
He paused and shook his head.
I'm sorry, that came out wrong. Not that I have any right to know. What I mean is, I was worried. Are you all right?
Actually, I went to meet with the man I told you about, the one my husband knew. And good news, he's sending someone from the escape line to pick you up tomorrow.
Oh.
I thought you'd be excited. Thomas looked away.
I am, and I'm glad I won't be a danger to you anymore. But...
But what?
But who will protect you if I'm not here?
Ruby could feel her cheeks heating up. You're worried about me? He looked surprised.
Well, of course.
It's been an awfully long time since anyone cared what happened to me.
It shouldn't be that way, Ruby. I know I'll always care, now that I've met you.
Something inside of her felt like it was breaking open. I'll always care about what happens to you, too. They held each other's gaze for a long moment, and Ruby could almost hear her own heart beating.
Thomas was the one to speak first. I should tell you that your friend Charlotte came to the door today.
Charlotte? From next door? He nodded.
Her mother fell.
Oh no. Is Madame Dachet all right? Thomas nodded.
She's fine, I believe. If I had to hazard a guess, she hadn't been eating enough and simply fainted. She hit her head on the way down, so there was some blood, which must have been frightening to Charlotte.
You went to their apartment?
It was the right thing to do. She was looking for you. She sounded scared.
You risked being spotted in order to help her. He shrugged and looked away. I should go check on her, Ruby murmured after a pause. But she couldn't move. Thomas was staring at her again, and it made her wish, somehow, that she could linger in this moment for a while more. You're a good man, Thomas, she said. A very good man. She didn't wait for a response before slipping out the door.
I think the pilot loves you, Charlotte said gravely to Ruby 30 minutes later, after Ruby had checked on Madame Dachet, who was awake, though still woozy.
He's only been here a few days, Charlotte. People don't fall in love that quickly.
Sometimes a few days is all it takes, Charlotte said confidently, and Ruby had to hide a smile.
Charlotte might be wise beyond her years, but she was still a child. She couldn't possibly understand such things. He'll be gone very soon anyhow, back to England.
The war will end someday, you know, and then you can see him again.
If we both survive, Ruby thought. But she mustered a smile and said, Let's not make this into something it's not. I'm just helping him for a few days. That's all. Now, you're sure you and your mother are all right? Charlotte nodded. Please don't hesitate to come get me if anything goes wrong.
Okay. Please tell your pilot I'm grateful.
Ruby slipped out of the Dachshund's apartment with Charlotte's words ringing in her ears. Your pilot. The mere thought of him belonging to her was enough to make her lightheaded. But she was being foolish, and she knew it. She drew a deep breath and forced herself back to reality before opening the door to her own apartment. Inside, it smelled like someone was cooking, but that was impossible. Thomas?
In here.
She rounded the corner to the kitchen to find two candles lit on the table and Thomas standing at the stove.
What are you doing? She asked.
He turned and smiled.
I hope you don't mind. I'm making us a meal. Charlotte gave me a bit of bread and cheese. It's not much, but my mother always said I had a special talent with cheese on toast. I thought we might bring half to the Dachshunds and share the rest between us.
She just stared at him, sure this was some kind of a mirage. Never in all the time she'd spent with Marcel had he ever offered to cook for her. No man had done that. She knew the bread was likely stale, and the cheese was probably old. But somehow, it smelled like the most delicious thing in the world.
Sit down, Thomas said, turning back to the stove. Make yourself comfortable. I wish I could offer you a glass of wine, but, alas, all I have is water.
Wait, I have some wine, Ruby said. She'd been saving the last of Marcel's collection for a special occasion. But this was just that, wasn't it? She went to the cupboard in the parlor and rummaged in the back until she found a bottle of 1937 Bordeaux. Will this do? She asked, returning to the kitchen. Thomas raised his eyebrows and grinned.
If you're sure you want to open it, I think it would elevate the meal to a proper feast.
The open-faced sandwich that Thomas prepared was one of the best things Ruby had ever eaten, and by the time they'd made it through the bottle of wine, they were sitting on the couch side by side, sharing stories of their childhoods. Ruby told him about the time she got lost in the poppy fields, the year she was 5, and how frightened she'd been. And Thomas chuckled and told her about how he'd been the same age when he wandered off one afternoon in London, scaring his poor parents half to death. They talked about school and their childhood dreams. Ruby had wanted to be a teacher, and Thomas had hoped to be a doctor.
I always loved science, he explained, and I like taking care of people. It seemed like a logical path to follow. In fact, I had already taken several courses in anticipation of continuing on to medical school.
So why didn't you? He sighed.
The war happened. I wanted a chance to help. I had just finished university when I decided to enlist.
Do you think you'll go back to school? Become a doctor someday?
Honestly, I don't know. A doctor is supposed to save lives, but I've had to take them. I'm not sure how that has changed who I am.
Things are different in wartime, and you're fighting for a greater good.
But there must be Germans who feel that way, too. If there's one thing I've learned in the sky, Ruby, it's that absolutely nothing is black and white. And as a doctor, I think you're supposed to see the world a bit more scientifically. I'm just not sure that's the person I am anymore.
But maybe, in a way, you've become a better person. After all, it's the nuances that make the world beautiful, isn't it? Her cheeks warmed as Thomas held her gaze.
And how about you? He asked. Do you still want to be a schoolteacher?
A year ago, I would have said no. But I've been working with Charlotte, helping her to learn English, and it has reminded me how much I love education. Knowledge is power, especially in times like these. Thomas nodded.
Talking of Charlotte. She mentioned something to me when I was in her apartment earlier, he said. It's my fault. I was asking about you, and I'm afraid I pried more than I intended.
Ruby blinked a few times. What did she say?
She told me about the baby. I'm so very sorry, Ruby.
Ruby felt suddenly numb, cold. She was glad, in a way, that Thomas knew. She had wanted to tell him the night before, but she hadn't known how to say the words. When she didn't say anything, he went on.
He's who you were talking about last night, isn't he? You said that you felt as if you'd failed because you couldn't save him. The tears were falling now, and she didn't bother to pretend otherwise.
He came too early. I wasn't strong enough.
Ruby. He reached for her hands and waited until she looked at him. I can't even imagine the pain of a loss like that. But you must know that it wasn't your fault.
But a mother's most important job is to protect her child.
Sometimes that's impossible, though. I know you well enough now to know that you did everything you could to keep that baby safe, didn't you?
Ruby nodded, feeling miserable.
Sometimes God's plans are different from ours, and it's impossible to know why, Thomas said. I need to ask something of you, Ruby.
She looked up, startled. He was asking her a favor in the midst of a conversation like this?
All right.
I need you to forgive yourself.
Thomas,
please, let me finish. You can carry the sadness with you, but not the guilt. Guilt will eat you alive, and in this case there's no reason for it. It's not my business, Ruby, but if there's one thing I hope for you, it's that you'll try to let go of the feeling that you failed, because you didn't. I want the best for you. I want you to be happy. And I don't think you will be, not entirely, until you lay this burden down.
When he was done speaking, she stared at him for a long time.
I'll try, she whispered at last. But why do you care? We'll probably never see each other again.
The war will end someday, Ruby, Thomas replied. And Paris isn't so far away from London.
Ruby let herself imagine a future where they could have all the time in the world to get to know each other. But that simply wasn't realistic. What were the chances that an RAF pilot and an American girl in Paris would find their way back to each other? She settled for saying,
It's a nice thought, Thomas. A very nice thought.
They talked long into the night until Ruby's eyelids grew heavy. Finally, she glanced at the clock on the mantel and stood up.
You have a long journey ahead of you tomorrow. You must get some sleep.
He stood too, and she was struck anew by the sheer size of him, the way her head would fit perfectly against his solid chest. He took a step closer, and she held her breath. In a split second, his lips were on hers, soft and tender. He laced a large hand through her hair, cradling the back of her head as he pulled her toward him. And she kissed him back, although she knew it was foolish. But it felt perfect and right, and she didn't want the moment to end. When he finally backed away, he looked dazed.
I shouldn't have done that. I'm sorry.
Ruby looked into his eyes.
I'm very glad you did.
Well, then.
He kissed her again, more intensely. And this time it was Ruby who broke away.
Thomas, we must get some sleep, she said.
Yes, yes, of course.
Ruby hesitated.
Good night, then, and thank you for a lovely dinner.
She walked into her bedroom without looking back, but after she closed the door behind her, she stayed there, listening. She yearned to go to him, and she wondered if on the other side of the wall he was feeling the same way. If he came to her door, she would let him in, even if it was against her better judgment. But he didn't. And after a while, her heart heavy with longing for something she knew she could never have, she crawled into bed and stared at the ceiling until dawn arrived.
Chapter 20 October 1941
Fleur?
The dark-haired woman standing outside Ruby's door was early. Too early. She was also too beautiful. Ruby knew that was a ridiculous thing to think, especially since the woman's voluptuous curves, bee-stung lips, and large green eyes probably made her an asset to the resistance, keeping the German soldiers distracted. But Ruby hated the idea of handing Thomas off to her, especially after the kiss they'd shared last night.
I'm... Sorry, you are
Fleur?
The woman repeated more uncertainly. Ruby could tell from her accent that she was French, but her beauty seemed foreign somehow, exotic.
Yes, and you must be...
Lure. I'm here for the package.
The woman smiled slightly, which unfortunately made her look even lovelier.
Philippe sent me,
she added when Ruby still hadn't said anything.
Oh yes, of course.
Ruby forced a smile. Aubert's cover name.
And you have the package?
Lure was regarding Ruby warily now.
One moment, please.
Ruby shut the door on Lure, knowing it was rude but not particularly caring. She wanted a few seconds alone with Thomas.
That's her?
His voice came from behind her, where he stood wearing Marcel's clothes.
The woman who will take me to the next stop on the line?
That's her, Ruby confirmed flatly. Thomas closed the distance between them in three long steps. He pulled Ruby into his arms and kissed her once more before pulling away.
I don't want to leave you.
The words made Ruby's heart ache. But you must.
I'll be back one day, Thomas said. I swear it.
Ruby doubted that the words could ever be true, but she wanted to believe. There was a knock at the door again, and Ruby held Thomas's gaze for one more long moment before opening it. Lore was standing with her hands on her hips, looking perturbed.
We really must go, she said. May I come in?
Ruby nodded, stepping aside and closing the door behind her. Lore introduced herself to Thomas, then, acting as if Ruby wasn't there at all, she plunged into a rapid-fire set of instructions in English.
You're to walk behind me, she said. No contact, no acknowledgement. If someone stops me, you keep walking. If someone stops you, I keep walking. There's no way we can be seen together. If all goes well, I'll lead you to the train station, where I'll board first, and you'll board a few minutes later in the same car. Again, we do not know each other. Here are your ticket and your identity papers, as well as your German travel document. All flawless forgeries.
She withdrew a few papers from her purse and handed them to Thomas.
You are a French farm worker who is deaf and mute. Do you understand?
But I can speak French.
With an English accent. Under no circumstances will you speak when spoken to.
Thomas nodded.
You will change into clothes I have here.
She held up the bag she was carrying.
And you will carry this sign.
She withdrew a sloppily hand-lettered sign that read in French, Deaf and mute. Can you spare a coin?
We will exit the train at Bordeaux, and you will follow me to another train. Understand?
Yes. Thomas was all business. Thank you. I understand you're taking a great risk.
Lore seemed to soften a little. We all are, including you. The important thing is to return you to combat.
She turned to Ruby.
Philippe says you did well nursing this pilot back to health. You're to meet him on Monday at 10 in the Tuileries if you're interested in discussing things.
I am.
Ruby felt stiff and awkward.
Thank you. Lore nodded. Well then, we must be on our way.
Thomas stepped forward and took Ruby's hand.
I don't know how to thank you, he said softly.
Then he leaned in and kissed her quickly on the cheek, the most either of them dared to do in front of Lure, and moved away.
You can thank me by staying safe, Thomas.
He was heading for the door, already too far away from her.
You must change what you're wearing.
Lure's voice was sharp. Thomas blinked a few times.
Of course.
She handed him the bag, and he disappeared into Ruby's bedroom.
Lure and Ruby regarded each other silently in the long minute it took him to change.
When he emerged, he looked like a different man. The clothing Lure had given him was worn and stained. He would easily pass for a French farmer.
I've left your husband's clothes on the bed, he said, locking eyes with Ruby. Thank you again for everything.
You're welcome.
He moved toward the door with Lure, and Ruby was afraid those were the last words they'd ever say to each other. They felt strangely impersonal. but as he passed her, he stopped and touched her cheek gently.
I will never, ever forget what you did for me.
Helping you is what any decent person would have done, Ruby said.
I'm not talking about that.
He studied her face for another second, as if memorizing her features, and then he let his hand fall and was gone.
Lor glanced back at Ruby once before pulling the door closed behind her.
After that, there was only silence. Ruby stood in place for a long time before making her way to the couch and sitting down in a daze. Had last night really happened? Had the last few days been real? Now what? There was a part of her that wished she'd asked Aubert about the percentage of pilots who made it safely back to England, and a part of her that was glad she hadn't. There was a knock at the door some time later, and Ruby jumped up to answer. What if something had happened to Thomas? But it was only Charlotte standing there, a single red rose in her hands. She held it out to Ruby.
"This bloomed on our terrace this morning," she said. "Can you believe it? In October. Mama wanted you to have it."
"Thank you, Charlotte." Ruby took the rose and inhaled. It smelled strong and sweet, and its color reminded her of the poppies that flourished near her parents' house in California, the ones she'd told Thomas about. It was enough to make her eyes fill with tears.
"Your pilot is gone," Charlotte said bluntly.
"Yes, yes, he is." Ruby drew a deep breath. "How is your mother feeling, Charlotte?"
"A little better, thank you."
"I'm very glad." Charlotte nodded, but she made no move to go. Ruby had the sense there was something the girl wanted to say. "Is everything okay, Charlotte?"
"I can hear my parents at night," she blurted out. "Arguing. They don't sleep anymore. I don't know what I should do. They just stay up and fight about the situation in Paris. They talk about whether we should try to leave."
Ruby felt a surge of pity for the Dachets. She knew things were only getting worse for Jews. There were frequent reports of arrests and deportations across the city.
"Maybe you should," she said gently. "This is our city, Ruby. It's the only home I've ever known. Why should we have to go?"
"Because it's getting dangerous."
"But you've decided to stay. Why should things be any different for us?"
Ruby could tell just by looking that the girl knew the answer to her own question. For the next few days, Ruby could barely sleep. Each time she closed her eyes, she saw something terrible happening to Thomas. She imagined him caught by a Nazi soldier on a train, betrayed by Lor, picked off the street in southwest France, shot on sight as he tried to cross into Spain. She knew she had to keep telling herself to forget him. Her mother had once told her that some people you meet are meant to be a part of your world forever, but some are meant only to change the course of your life and then move on. Thomas had shown her that she could be useful in the escape line, restored her faith in herself, given her back a purpose. He had even helped her to begin letting go of her guilt over the baby. Maybe that was all he was meant to do. Maybe in time, she would stop thinking of him, stop remembering the feel of his lips against hers. On Monday, Ruby went to the Tuileries garden to meet Aubert. As she strolled through the flower-lined pathways, she was struck by how normal things seemed. There were little boys racing white-sailed boats in the pond, giggling girls chasing each other, contented mothers pushing prams and chatting. It was like none of them knew a war was going on. Ruby wasn't sure whether she should be grateful for the normalcy or horrified by it.
"Act casual," Aubert said quietly as he approached quickly from the west entrance to the park.
He kissed her on both cheeks and put an arm around her.
"Behave as if we are old friends, just meeting up for a chat."
"But we are old friends," Ruby said. "Aren't we?" She drew her answer from his silence. He had never been her friend. He had merely tolerated her. Was that what he was doing now, putting on a friendly face to keep her happy? They settled onto a bench together facing the pond. It was the perfect cover for a clandestine meeting. There were thousands of witnesses, so no one could accuse them of conspiring, and yet they could talk without being overheard.
"Always eyed in plain sight," Aubert murmured. "It's the last place the Nazis look."
"Is the pilot safe?" Ruby couldn't help but ask.
The one I was sheltering?
I don't know. Once they leave Paris, I have no idea what happens. It's better that way. The less each of us knows, the less we can reveal if we are captured.
But he got out of Paris, at least.
Yes.
Aubert was silent for a moment.
You know, it's our job to send them on to the next stop in the line, not to befriend them.
Ruby looked away, but she was sure Aubert could feel her shoulders tensing under his arm.
I nursed him back to health, Aubert, so obviously I care what becomes of him.
Laure seemed to feel there was something more between the two of you. Of course, I told her she must be wrong. Surely you are still mourning your husband.
Of course I am, Ruby said quickly, swallowing a hard lump of guilt.
In any case, I know you went to help us. I appreciate that, Ruby, but I've considered it, and I don't think you're the right fit. You already stand out.
And yet I harbored a pilot for days.
Still, I'm not sure you're capable.
She didn't wait for him to finish. You didn't think I'd be capable of something like this in the first place, though, did you? And I have already proven you wrong.
Ruby, and truly, Aubert, why would anyone suspect me? She asked, interrupting him again. Because of Marcel? People think I'm nothing, a nobody.
From the sheepish look Aubert gave her, Ruby knew he'd thought it too. Perhaps he still did.
See, she continued, Marcel laid the perfect groundwork. If the Nazis ever have a suspicion, they'll only have to ask around, and they'll be informed of just how useless I am.
Her laugh sounded more bitter than she intended it to.
He created the perfect cover.
This is very dangerous work, Ruby.
I'm aware of the risks.
But they torture people. You can't possibly know how you'd stand up to that.
I do know that I would sooner die than risk endangering any of the pilots I'd be helping.
And under no circumstances could you tell the Nazis about me or Law or anyone else you meet on the line. As an American, you might survive. But those of us who are French would be executed immediately. We'd be putting our lives in your hands, Ruby.
Aubert, I'm involved already, which means your life is in my hands now. I suppose it's up to you what happens next.
She held her breath. His hand on her shoulder flexed and released.
Very well. But from now on, I'm Philippe. You must remember that. The codenames are for our protection and you mustn't be careless. I'll send you your first pilot within a week's time, as long as the Brits agree, and I'll work on getting you extra ration cards. Law or a man with the codename Jean-Louis will do the pickups from your apartment. Unless something goes wrong, you should have the men for 48 hours at most.
Ruby took a deep breath.
Thank you. Those are the wrong words for a situation like this. You think that you're embarking on a great adventure, Ruby. But I fear you've just started down a road that will ultimately end in your death.
6 days later, there was a soft knock at Ruby's door, and she opened it to find a man with small dark eyes dressed in dungarees and a faded shirt. There was a deep gash down the right side of his face, and he looked exhausted.
Fleur?
He asked, glancing around nervously. He reminded Ruby of a skittish deer.
Yes, Ruby said in English, realizing immediately that he was the first of the men Aubert had promised to send her way.
Please, won't you come in?
He didn't move at first.
You speak English.
I'm American.
His eyes filled with tears.
God, you have no idea how nice it is to hear my own language.
He stepped inside and she shut the door behind him.
What on earth are you doing here, so far from home?
I might ask you the same.
He laughed, which turned into a hacking cough.
I was shot out of the sky over Abbeville. A farmer saw my plane go down and reached me before the Germans did. Hid me in his barn for 2 days, before passing me along to a chap who drove me to another town. I slept 3 nights there in the basement of an inn. Then I was picked up by a member of the resistance, who gave me a bicycle and had me follow him to the suburbs of Paris. I was given instructions to come to you. I'm told this is my last stop before I head for Spain.
Ruby was sure he wasn't supposed to have filled her in such detail.
Each of us only knows the next step in the line, she said gently.
But
Please take care not to tell anyone else where you stayed at each step of the way. It could endanger the operation. He narrowed his eyes, and she could tell in an instant he wasn't accustomed to being chided.
I didn't give you any details. Besides, surely you know all of this already.
Actually, I didn't.
If you say so.
She didn't like the way he was looking at her now.
Anyhow, he said, I suppose Fleur isn't your real name.
I suppose not. She left it at that.
Well, then, my name is Lawrence. Not an assumed name, mind you. Lawrence Bartholomew Fisher. I fly Spitfires.
Well, it's nice to meet you, Mr. Fisher, and I think you'll find the accommodations here quite suitable.
I'll show you to the closet. The closet?
Fisher was with Ruby for a day and a half, followed less than a week later by a bomber pilot named Harley Holt, and then a gunner named Stephen Orlando. They ran together after that. One or two a week would show up at her door, and each time she would welcome them, feed them, and sneak them into the hall closet, where they waited for Laura to pick them up. There were a few close calls, neighbors who happened to see the men coming or going, the infrequent appearances of the concierge, Madame Lefebvre, in the hall downstairs. But Ruby knew from their pursed lips that they assumed she was entertaining various gentlemen callers. Just as well. Charlotte, however, was well aware of what was going on, and this concerned Ruby. She knew she could trust her young neighbor, but in the end, Charlotte was only a girl. What if she let something slip? Or what if Ruby was found out and someone believed that Charlotte and her family had been involved? Still, Ruby couldn't turn her back on the men. In her third month working with the escape line, she was surprised to welcome an Air Force pilot on loan to the RAF who'd been raised in Palmdale, just 10 miles from her own hometown.
"Golly, miss, of course I know Lancaster," he'd exclaimed when she told him where she was from.
She knew she shouldn't be handing out details like that, and normally she was much more discreet. But she couldn't help jumping at the opportunity to reminisce about Southern California with a stranger who had somehow found his way to her door on the other side of the world.
"Your parents must be mighty worried about you. You hear from them often?"
She shook her head. "It's been months now."
"Damned war. Well, if you want, I can get a message to them on your behalf when I get home."
She hesitated. For a second, it sounded like a dream come true. But telling him her real name or who her parents were came with too many complications. She'd already said too much. "Just help the Allies win the war, will you?"
"Yes, miss." His expression was grave. "I will do my absolute best. It's why I'm so eager to get out of this damned city. No offense intended, of course."
"None taken. It does feel a bit like Paris is damned, doesn't it?" He nodded and looked toward her window.
"I imagine this must have been a pretty beautiful place before the war."
"It truly was."
"You think you'll move back to the States when this is all done?"
"I honestly don't know. I have trouble thinking beyond tomorrow."
"Strange how war changes things, isn't it? I was supposed to be taking over my father's tax business. Instead, I'm hiding out in a pretty stranger's apartment in Paris. Never thought I'd wind up here."
"Neither did I," Ruby said. And like the pilot, she wasn't just talking about Paris. She was talking about the way life had twisted, the way she no longer recognized the ground she was standing on. "But the war can't last forever, can it? Maybe it's not too late to find our way back to the lives we're supposed to have."
"Or maybe this is it."
The pilot smiled sadly.
"Maybe this is exactly who we were meant to be all along."
Chapter 21. October 1941. After Thomas left Ruby's apartment, Lure led him to a train station in Paris, where there were three other British pilots waiting, each with his own guide. Thomas had been given strict orders not to acknowledge any of them, and certainly not to talk to them. But it was a comfort just to know they were there. He was no longer in this alone, which made him feel like he had a legitimate chance of survival.
They boarded a night train to Bordeaux, and though Lore was in his compartment, he was not to look at her or attempt to communicate in any way. The value of a night train was that he could feign sleep each time a train official or German officer walked by. And that was exactly what he did, cracking his eyes open slightly only after their footfalls had disappeared. In the morning, they switched to a train to Bayonne, and he caught glimpses of the other pilots boarding cars along with their guides, too. So far, so good. They were in southern France now, which seemed less perilous than Paris. In Bayonne, their guides left them with terse good luck wishes and handed them off to another man, who gave them each a ticket and put them on a smaller train to the tiny town of Dax. This, Thomas understood, was to be another dangerous part of the journey. The new man wouldn't be accompanying them because of the risk of capture. They were to get off the train and try to appear inconspicuous as they waited to be picked up outside the station by another contact.
"Rely on your false papers," the man said quietly in French, which Thomas quickly translated for the others. "Say nothing, even if questioned."
On the train, Thomas watched with growing trepidation as a German soldier boarded the first compartment and began asking passengers for their papers. One of the other three RAF pilots seemed younger than the rest, 19, maybe 20, and he was the first one the Nazi soldier reached. Thomas sat paralyzed as the young pilot looked blankly at the soldier who was barking an order at him.
"Give him your papers," Thomas thought,
wishing he could come to the boy's rescue without arousing suspicion.
"Damn it, just do what the guides told you to."
After a few long seconds, Thomas watched as the boy reached into his pocket with hands that were clearly shaking and handed over his identity papers. The Nazi soldier looked at them for a moment and asked in French what the purpose of his travel was. The boy continued to stare, and the soldier, his eyes blazing with suspicion, repeated the question more loudly.
"Oh, God," Thomas thought, "he's about to be caught."
But then, an elderly woman sitting across the row from the pilot spoke up, explaining to the German soldier that the boy was her grandson, that they were going to visit a distant aunt, and that the boy was deaf.
"How dare you ridicule him?" the woman asked.
The Nazi soldier looked uncertain, but the woman moved next to the young pilot and put an arm around his shoulder.
There, my boy. He didn't mean any offense."
The soldier narrowed his eyes, but after a moment, he grunted in disgust and moved on. Thomas exhaled a huge sigh of relief, and although he dared not make eye contact with any of the other pilots, he did lock gazes with the elderly woman, who smiled slightly at him, nodded, and left to find a seat in another car.
Thank God for good Samaritans.
When the train arrived in Dax, the four pilots got off and tried to blend into the small crowd as they handed their tickets in and left the station. Outside, a pair of men were waiting for them.
"Welcome," the taller one greeted them in English.
He sported a mustache and a faded cap. Thomas didn't think he sounded French, but he couldn't place his strong accent.
"We're here to take the group of you to the mountains."
He lifted his chin at the six bicycles leaning against the wall beside them. There was no time to ask questions as they mounted up and pedaled out of the train yard into a quaint French village. Thomas could feel sweat beating on his brow as they passed a cafe with a few Germans at tables out front, but none of the soldiers gave them a second glance, and once they were around the corner, Thomas relaxed a little. They just might make it after all. There seemed to be far less of a German presence here than there had been in Paris, which boded well. They cycled all day in silence. The man who'd spoken to them rode ahead, and the man with him, who had yet to say a word, brought up the rear. Just before nightfall, with the Pyrenees looming in front of them, they pulled off the main road into a village, where they made their way down winding lanes to a small, isolated bungalow at the edge of the forest.
"You will spend the night here,"
the man in the faded cap said, looking at each of them in turn.
"They are very nice hosts, very brave to shelter you. In the morning, we go."
"Go where?" asked the youngest pilot. The man jerked his thumb toward the jagged mountains, which cast a shadow over the town.
"South, to Spain."
That night, over a hot dinner of lamb and beans, the pilots spoke to each other for the first time. Their hosts were a middle-aged couple who retreated